Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's raising the vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. We're at liveparanormal.com. Please join us there or at one of our affiliates, iHeartRadio.com, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Player FM, Blog Talk Radio, the list goes on and on and on. I'm your host, Sheena Muddle. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister and the founder of RaisingTheVibration.org, a nonprofit movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity. I'm a 27-year talk radio host, and this is Raising the Vibration Radio. When my mom passed, Friday will be 6 years, I wanted to do something to carry on her teachings, both spiritual and humane. And one day I got the hit from spirit that I should start a nonprofit movement of peace and love and kindness and unity, because those were things that she felt and that I feel the world needs more of. And certainly now in our world more than ever, we need more of that. This radio show, which was the first outreach of that movement, is about all of those things. But it's also about ascension, evolvement, inspiration, and yes, I doubled up this one, love. Are you ascending? Are you raising your own vibration? And then are you using that to evolve as a spirit and as a human being? And once you have amassed both the ascension and the evolvement, are you using those things to inspire others? This show basically is about, what are you doing to make the world a better place? What is your passion? What is your service? And how are you using both of those things to enhance everyone around you, right? I love that saying, when you get to the top, send the elevator down and bring up 20 people and just keep bringing them up. That's what life is supposed to be about. Everything that we learn, everywhere that we grow, it's supposed to play into the whole to help others to be inspired to do the same. So every week on the show, I bring on guests from my spiritual world, from my entertainment life, from my nonprofit life, and we talk about just that. And this guest today is certainly no exception to that. He's a wonderfully gifted minister and speaker and spreader of joy and love and fighter and survivor, and I adore him, and I don't know what the world would be without him, and I think we are all blessed to have him in it. And if you know him, then you know exactly what I mean. Even my wonderful, fantastic staff pastor position at Founders Metropolitan Community Church, I owe to this wonderful man. He understands what it's like to bring others up and to help others to grow and ascend, to play into the overall vibration, which is such an important thing, and the reason really that we all are here. So please welcome to Raising the Vibration today, back to the show, my wonderful friend, Reverend Steve Peters. How are you, sweetheart? It's so nice to hear your voice and picture your beautiful face.
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thank you, Sheena, my friend. And so good to be on the show with you, to hear your voice.
And I know you feel the same way I do, right? That every single thing that happens to you happens to you so you can inspire other people. And if we're sharing our triumphs and our agonies with people, right, so that people can learn and grow from both, or sympathize or empathize, or realize they're not the only one out there going through something.
Exactly, yes.
Then why are we here, right? I mean, that's why we're here.
Right.
To spread love and joy.
Right.
That's exactly the main reason we're here. And
exactly.
And you, right, you just keep loving and just keep inspiring and just keep showing up and making yourself available. And I think that's a big part of it, right?
I try to. Yeah. Oh, I absolutely try to be there. you know, and I'm looking forward to being out and about even more than ever now that, you know, we're all feeling a little freer to get out there and even take off our masks in some places and trust that we are not going to be infected with whatever is going on in the world, let alone
right.
COVID. I mean,
right.
you know.
Right, whatever the next
absolutely.
Variant is. Yeah,
exactly.
And I think with that we're learning to trust in a lot of ways, because I think that we have lost a lot of what my mama used to call our people skills from not being
yes.
around people and not being out. We've become very introspective, which I think was good for us as a whole because there was work we all needed to do. But now I think it's
right.
important that we get out again and show the world
exactly.
That we're here and that we are here to help others and we're here to inspire.
Yeah.
And it's also just fun to get back to fun things because I think we all need that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's funny because there's so many exciting things happening in my life these days. And sometimes I have had moments of feeling like, oh, but the world is in such crisis right now, and we're at war, and we're almost at war. I mean, there is a war going on, and people are suffering horribly, and you know, and who am I to be talking about all these exciting things that are happening to me? You know, but a friend reminded me it's important that we have the joy too, because the joy is healing the fractures and the wars and all of that. The joy and the love are healing tools that we have in this world that is broken and
absolutely
that has so much conflict right now. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know,
and you're allowed
so,
to feel good
yeah.
about your life. Someone brought that up, I think,
yeah.
I think on one of my radio shows last week. You're allowed
oh, yeah?
to feel good about your life. You're allowed, either
yes.
that or it was my web TV show. It was one of those last week. You're allowed to be happy. You're allowed to love.
Yes.
Everything doesn't
yes.
have to be so awful. And
that's right.
I think
that's
that,
right.
so I know I tell this story on the show all the time, but now I'm going to tell this because I know you fought for years with AIDS, so you spent a lot of time in hospitals.
Yeah.
I have a
that's
friend
right.
that when I was in my 20s was diagnosed with end-stage breast cancer. And basically every time
uh-huh.
we saw her, we just kind of said goodbye to her. And I'm sure people did that with you too.
Yeah.
You know, not literally,
oh,
but
absolutely.
Figuratively, you thought this is the last time I'm ever going to see
yeah.
her. And then she
yeah.
just miraculously went into remission and got better and never got sick
well,
again. And one time
years yeah.
later, she was doing my radio show and she told the story that when she was in chemo, the first day she was in chemo, a woman came, a volunteer came and had made cookies for everybody. And was bringing cookies,
right.
and she reached out to take a cookie, and the woman next to her said, oh, don't take that cookie. You don't know what's in that cookie. You don't know what that woman's done to that cookie, and basically this whole thing. So after the chemo session was over, the nurse came up to her and said, you know, I know it's your first day here. I have to tell you something. I see a lot of people come and go, and you're going to live. She said, I know you don't think you're going to live, but with your attitude, you are going to live. And that woman who
uh-huh.
was so upset about the cookie, she may not, because that's the kind of attitude that doesn't help you to
yeah.
heal. And sure enough, my friend went into remission, and that woman died. So,
wow.
you know, you have to, even when it looks the darkest, right, you have to find
yes.
a way to find the light in the darkness.
Absolutely.
Or you're in trouble,
absolutely.
Because that's all we've got, right?
Yeah.
All we have is hope.
Yeah.
All of us, you know, I just said the other day, my friend is really sick. And I've been, you know, coming over to hang out with her the last couple of days and help take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I just ran into her neighbor out front. He's like, I don't know how she does it. And I'm like, man, she lives on God and love. And I think you too, my friend,
yeah.
for many years, right, just lived
yeah.
on God and
yeah.
love.
Oh, God, that's right. That's right. I was so very sick with AIDS and two kinds of terminal cancer in the 80s. And there were many dark nights of the soul in my life back in those days. But, you know, I am so grateful for my faith in a healing, loving God, a God of life, and a God of healing who teaches me that that you know, hope is so important, and hope is the best thing to fight. Hope and love are the best things to fight fear and anxiety and death-defying, or not death-defying, but death-dealing diseases that are life-threatening but don't have to be terminal every time. You know, when I was first diagnosed as terminal I had been sick from 1982 with what was then known as GRID. That's what AIDS was known as back then, gay-related immunodeficiency. And in 1984, I was diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma and Kaposi sarcoma, and I was given 8 months to live. I wasn't supposed to live to see 1985. And I had a doctor, I still have her, she is my primary care physician, Dr. Alexandra Levine, and she told me, you know, there are no 100% in medicine. And even though now it looks like everybody's dying from AIDS who has it, the fact is that not everybody is going to die from AIDS. And if one in a million survive it, why not believe that you are that one in a million and then act accordingly? Yeah. And so I did, and I set out to, I mean, there was nothing written back then about surviving AIDS or about wellness for people with AIDS, but there was a lot written about wellness for people with cancer and healing around people with cancer. So I studied all I could, and I put together my own wellness program. And I was determined to turn this around. And I still had a lot to go through with an experimental chemotherapy that nearly killed me. It did kill a lot of other people and, you know, caused me to go blind and be paralyzed on my left side. But you know what? I got well. In 1987, I was well. And my cancers were in complete remission. And, you know, I had 20 years of good health from then until like 2008. And I started getting sick again. And then I got really sick in 2012. I'm not sure I knew you back then, but
I think we knew you then.
Met.
We met at our mutual friend Allison Arngram's birthday.
Yes.
The year that we went to the Chinese restaurant and Robin Tyler was.
I want to say
that was maybe 2010 or 11.
So I
knew you then. And I remember how sick you were, and I remember how scary it was.
Yeah. I mean, I was very near death for 6 weeks. I hovered near death, and I actually had three near-death experiences in those 6 weeks to go with my two near-death experiences from the 80s. So I've crossed over a number of times, and I've come
back. They just keep sending you back. Is there something wrong with you, Steve?
They just keep sending me back until I get it right. But, no, somebody once asked me, like, because I always talk about how absolutely incredible it is on the other side, the incredible peace and the love that surrounds us all, and how, you know, I was terrified of dying alone, and I discovered in my first near-death experience that we're never alone. You know, even when we think we're alone in the body, we're not alone in the spirit. We have spirits around us who are keeping us company.
I think the only time that we're ever alone is when we are entangled in some way with people who harbor a lot of negativity and darkness inside of them.
Ooh,
I think you can be more alone in a room full of people who have a hole inside of them than you ever are by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I know.
And even then you're not alone because you have spirit with you. You're just allowing
yourself
to believe that you're alone. I mean, I think
there are times where I do feel terribly alone, where I have felt terribly alone. I don't right now, but, you know, there have been times, certainly. And there were times during that period in 2012 when I felt desperately alone. And you know, when I learned a long time ago, back in the 80s, when I was so sick then, I had these long nights where I was all alone in my bed. And, you know, I've only once had a relationship, and that didn't last very long at all. And so most of the time I've been sick, I've been alone in that bed, and so terribly alone. And, you know, in those nights, I would oftentimes invite Jesus to be the lover of my soul. I would invite Jesus into my bed to hold me. And, you know, to me, I in some ways, I'm a pretty traditional Christian, I'm afraid. that scares some people, but, you know.
Oh, I don't think so.
And it's many different paths.
And it's funny because I find you to be extremely metaphysical, but I also find Christ to have been extremely metaphysical. So
yes,
yes. I think
that's one of the things I've always loved about you. Yes.
That I feel that way? Yeah, I feel to love Christ is to embrace your metaphysical self as he embraced his.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
His spirituality was smart. I mean, it made sense the same way that metaphysics is a kind of science, right? And it makes sense.
Yes.
And it was all based in love. So it's funny when people talk about, oh, this and that and this belief. I'm like, really? Have you read the Bible? Because Jesus was a pretty great physician.
I know. He really was, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that's the whole point of the resurrection, I think. I mean, you know, even, you know, if God is greater than the death of Jesus on the cross, which I believe as a Christian, then God is greater than anything that separates us from the love of God, anything that keeps us from being fully alive, even in the face of disease and death, we can be fully alive. And, you know, I've had the experience many times of being near death and feeling more alive than I have ever felt. It's really an incredible thing to put those two things together. But another thing that I wanted to talk about with you, Sheena, is, you know, this concept of healing. We talk a lot about healing in the context of, you know, getting well from breast cancer or recovering from ovarian cancer or recovering from AIDS. I also served for 5 or 6 years at the Chris Brownlee AIDS Hospice and here in Los Angeles. And my experience was that there were people who did the work of healing, even though they were on their deathbed. They continued to do the work of healing, and they healed into death. And I began to I discovered I had a gift for helping people heal into their death. And what does that mean? Well, what is the work of healing? It's healing your relationships, seeking forgiveness, offering forgiveness, being at one with God, being a lover of other people's souls, you know, being being close to people and helping people feel that peace that passes all understanding. And I think that is extremely possible in dying. And there are people who rail against their deaths, and you know, and they have every right to do that. And they approach their death just clutched up like this, and they die like this. Oh.
Right.
And then there are people who just sort of float into their death, you know. So there is healing into life, but there is also healing into death. And I've been very fortunate that I was able to heal into life several times over the last 40 years. But I have also seen the power and the sacredness, the holiness of the space where people heal into death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. And I think that there's no sense in fighting it, right? I mean, my mama, man,
right.
She couldn't wait to get out of there fast enough. They said, hospice could take, palliative care could take 3 months, and 3 hours later she was singing with the angels. She was like, how fast can I get the hell out of here?
Right,
but
right.
When my grandfather was dying.
Body. Yeah.
Exactly. When my grandfather was dying, my father's father, he stayed in a hospital bed at my aunt's for months and months, and he would scream and yell out loud like, that's not true. That's a rotten, filthy lie. Who said those things about me? And my mom would, I was about 11 at the time, and my mom would sit and laugh. She'd say, oh, my God, Pop's arguing with St. Peter trying to get in. But, but it makes you wonder, right? Because I'm not a person who's really about judgment. That's a concept that I think is more human than spirit. But I do believe it, everything that's been explained to me is that when we pass, there is an evaluation period. And, just like it would be at the review period at the end of the year for a job or for school, whatever it is, right? There's an evaluation where you kind of look at your life and sit down with spirit and figure out what was good and what do you need to work on the next time and, what did you take from it? And I do think those that know that they have done things, I believe that they are terrified because they don't want to have to explain to spirit. It's one thing down here when nobody, it's one thing throwing a party when your parents are out of town. When they get home, you have to explain to them why the china's broken, and that's a whole nother thing. So I think that there are folks who don't, like when I act in thinking about what are the spiritual ramifications of what I'm doing. But people that don't, right, they just play down here like it's a drunken bender in Vegas. They forget that at the end of the time, there is a responsibility to have a little chit-chat with spirit and figure out, what was the summation of your life? What did you do?
Yeah.
And I think about that every day. And I always say when I talk to clients, Steve, that your life doesn't have to be about service. It's not required.
Uh-huh.
But I do feel that it is what spirit appreciates. I mean, we have free will down here, right? We don't have to do anything. We are given free will.
Right.
But everything that you do, you should be thinking about, how can I make the world a better place? What does this mean for the world? Who am I making smile? Even if it's just one person.
Yeah.
It can just be something for one person. But it has to be, you have to think about every action. And that's the science part again, right? Every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
Right.
If you put your negativity on a waitress at a restaurant, then where does that negativity go? Does she put it on someone else? Is she not as friendly of a waitress at the next table? That negative energy, it stays where it is. And it goes, and that's why it's so important that we just raise the vibration of the positivity all the time. And it doesn't mean you have to become a minister. It doesn't mean you have to become a monk or, live a life of pure holiness. But it does mean think about what you're doing, and are you doing things that help other people? And my father was very self-focused, and he had a very hard time at the end, much like his father screaming at St. Peter. And at the end, when he was talking the day he passed, but we didn't know he was going to pass the day, but he was in the nursing home, he was fighting. Like I think I told you about last time you were on the show about the black things that told him he had to go with him and the white things that he didn't have to. And my mom got very upset after that. And she said, I don't understand, he didn't murder anybody. And I thought, well, maybe the judgment is just, maybe the part of the evaluation is, what did you do while you were here that wasn't for you? Because maybe if you just live your whole life for yourself, when you get home, right, spirit's kind of like, I don't know. What did you do for other people?
Yeah.
It's like if you ate all the Girl Scout cookies yourself and then wanted the merit badge. They're like, I don't know. Did you really sell the cookies? Because we never saw anything. I think it's something it has to do with that, right? That yeah. Where is the love? Where is the you being a part of the whole? And that's why I love people like you that just naturally get that idea that, you could be somebody who say, you know what, I spent all that time in the hospital. I spent all that time suffering. I survived decades of AIDS. Now I'm just going to do what I want to do, and I don't want to do anything for anybody else.
Yeah,
but instead for you, it was always about becoming
life.
A speaker. Well, I agree.
Right.
I agree. And it's still like that, yeah. Right? You spread your,
yeah.
even what you've been going on with you in your entertainment life in the last year and some,
yeah.
you're spreading, you're spreading the love, right? It's your ministry.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, during COVID, when the lockdown happened, I had just started writing my memoir. And my friend Allison, our friend Allison, you know, Allison Argren,
mm-hmm.
she told me, you know, we need to find a job to do while we're locked in to our homes in this COVID time. And I decided that writing the memoir was my job. And that was the way that while I was cooped up in my apartment by myself, I was going to sit down every day and write about the amazing grace that I have experienced in my life and all of the dark days that led to the days of sunlight and grace and healing and love and it was such a valuable exercise to go through that. And now we're coming out of COVID and hopefully, you know, that we're beginning to see the end, or at least the beginning of the end our COVID times. And so I'm getting back out there again. And I am getting this book prepared, this memoir. It's in the hands of a literary agent. Now we're looking for a publisher. And what do you know is happening in my life? I'm suddenly getting all of this publicity and coverage over
the
movie, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, you know, and so it's all coming together. And what it's about is not about aggrandizing me. It's about spreading the light, spreading the healing. You can't keep it unless you give it away, you know, giving the love, giving the peace that passes all understanding, and helping people experience that through my story. I think stories are so important, all of our stories, and it's so important to share our stories because that's where we find, the keys to understanding, the keys to that peace, the keys to that healing that can happen.
I agree. So I just saw Eyes of Tammy Faye. If we can talk about that for a minute.
Oh, yeah? Sure.
I just saw it last week.
Yeah.
A couple things really. And first of all, the guy who played you, I was so excited. He did you so well. And that made me very happy. Because sometimes films will take weird liberties and you're like, what? He really got your energy. And I love that. But this is what I took away. First of all, I thought the film was brilliant. I thought Jessica was brilliant. Uh-huh. I hope she takes the Oscar because she deserves it. Tammy Faye, I carried that movie around with me for days. I felt so bad for her because I really felt like Tammy Faye Baker in that group of people, right?
Right.
And I'm not going to get all feminist on you and talk about men, but it's not about men, but that is a very patriarchal world, right? Evangelical Christianity is a very patriarchal world, but even her mother, right?
Exactly.
She was surrounded by Christians, and can you hear my finger quotes whooshing through the air? But she was really the only really true Christian in that group because she was encompassing the ideas of Jesus, which were community, connection, love, inclusion, she was the real Christian in there, and everybody kept knocking her for being a real Christian. And I think my mom was what she called herself, a Teachings of Christ Christian, because she always wanted to differentiate between the giant religion and what she felt Jesus really was. And I just feel like Tammy Faye's story probably is very simpatico with anybody who is trying to be a pure soul and follow the actual the actual teachings of Christ and not toe the party line of the institution. And how she suffered for it, right? And
she suffered for
just being an open channel. She wasn't trying to take it all over. She wasn't trying to show what a big feminist she was and she could do it on her own.
Right.
She was just every day trying to spread love and joy and follow the path of
Christ. Right. Yeah,
and she, I mean,
in the beginning of the movie, you see how she as a child suffered because of, you know, just feeling like an outcast and like she was so different. And she was she didn't feel loved the way that she, I think, needed to feel loved. And so she, as an adult, understood what it felt not to be loved and to be put down and outcast. And so she reached out to people who were down and out. And she, and you know, a gay man with AIDS in 1985 was considered to be down and out, by, especially in her world of televangelism, you know, AIDS was God's punishment, right? For homosexuality, and homosexuality was a sin, and the homosexual agenda, as Jerry Falwell puts it, put it in the movie, you know, was running rampant and ruining America and all of that. Well, she said, no, they're just people, you know. We're all just made of dirt, you know, and we're just people, and we're all. We all need love and acceptance. And so she invited me on her program as the first time a televangelist, anybody in that world, reached out to a gay man with AIDS. And she happened to reach out to me. And I trusted that she was going to be accepting and loving and encouraging and compassionate, and she was. And, you know, I just somehow knew that it was going to be a good thing. Now, at the time, I didn't think I did a very good job, and I remember telling my friend Lucia afterwards, we got home, I got home, and I was telling her about the interview, and I said, oh, I should have said this, and I shouldn't have said that, and I'm, God, I'm so sorry I didn't say this, and I'm so glad no one I know will ever see this. But it's turned into this vehicle of grace. I mean, a powerful vehicle that I had no. I mean, you know, it's the butterfly effect. The butterfly flutters its wings, and a hurricane happens across the world. You know, I threw a pebble of love into the pool that Tammy Faye was throwing a pebble of love and understanding and acceptance into, and that pool has rippled out. I've heard from so many people through the years who have said that that interview changed my life or it saved my life. I had somebody come up to me not all that many years ago who said, I was 12 years old at the time of that, and I was going seriously contemplating suicide because I knew I was gay, even at 12. And I saw your interview, and I knew that I didn't have to kill myself. Wow.
Yeah.
You know?
It saved lives.
And I had no idea that God would use it that way.
living through that time and living, growing up in Orange County since I was 13, which was very conservative in the 80s, under the veil of the Trinity Broadcast Network. And boy, did those two rip off the Bakers. Oh my God, they were like a Baker drag show. I couldn't believe when I watched Iza Tammy Faye, I was like, oh my God, those two, they just, they copied everything, even the her doing the puppets.
Right.
Shocking.
Exactly.
But anyway, and feeling so out of place in that world because I hadn't been raised by, I was raised by a smart New Yorker who was a secret metaphysician and psychic. You know what I mean? I didn't, I was not raised to be that judgmental. But I was watching it with a friend who had grown up in that world and did have a parent that was very anti-gay when my friend came out and did pull the whole, you know, it's God's will and Ronald Reagan says and all that stuff. And when I saw that interview, that's exactly what I said to my friend. We watched that film. I said, how many people that secretly knew they were gay in the church but didn't even sometimes know what to call it saw that interview and thought, oh, my God, there I am, and everything got a little bit better. And I think, I believe there was a part of Tammy Faye that knew that. I think about in the film, and if you haven't seen the film, spoiler alert, so here we go. The scene where her mom comes to the studio and it's the day where the guy's talking about penis pumps and the mom is so angry about the penis pumps, and her thing was but kind of like, but this is a problem people have and they need to know that there's help. And I think that was just sort of her attitude towards everything was, but somebody needs this. Somebody needs this cooking show segment. Somebody needs this. And I think that somebody needs this song, like whatever it was. Exactly. And I think that was actually the, because, you know, think about Christ, right? Jesus kind of wandered around with his buddies from town to town, and wherever they got, whenever they got there, somebody needed something, right? One town had lepers. Another place, somebody needed fish. Another place, somebody needed wine. And he just kind of healed. And I think that is what true ministry is, right? And you can do ministry every day and not call yourself a minister.
Absolutely.
I think people that run nonprofits are ministers. You're, what you're doing is you're just being about the world and helping people. And I was very impressed with her, and I almost felt during the film like the reason that she got so beat up by all of them was it's kind of like the emperor's new clothes, right? If you're if you're whole, if you're towing that party line in the institution and you're profiting off of people's fear of things being a certain way, and then somebody else comes in and changes the static quo, status quo with this, doesn't Jesus just love everybody? Doesn't God just love everybody? Boy, are you in trouble because you rock the boat.
Are you ever in trouble? Right, exactly.
And I feel like she never really got the ministry that she deserved, and she never really got, because, you know, she didn't need him. She could have done it on her own. Not that he wasn't good at what he did, and I guess that he ran the business and then ran it into the ground. It's nothing against him. It's just that it just, I was so shocked to really discover how many of the ideas were hers and the plans were hers, but how much of the, just the genuine nature of all of it came from her. And it's just a
I'm so glad that Jessica Chastain made this film. I mean, she bought the rights 10 years ago or so, and developed it and nurtured it and brought it along, and she wanted to show that Tammy Faye was not this SNL cartoon character, you know. She wasn't she wasn't a smear of makeup on a T-shirt. She was a real live human being who was appreciated, who appreciated how different people can be from each other, and how that's a wonderful thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing that this world has such a diversity of creation, that there should be LGBTQIA people in the world.
I agree, and I think Jessica got that.
Yeah.
Well, and she and, it, the know, film was put together beautifully,
oh,
was cast beautifully, and you could tell that she put a lot of heart and love into that character, that she was not.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can feel if an actor's portraying somebody that they really don't like or they think is a joke.
Uh-huh.
And you could tell that Jessica really got her as she portrayed her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And how wonderful it's been for you that you've developed a nice little friendship with her, and she's been so supportive of you. And like you're like a little celebrity to her, right? I mean, that's kind of interesting. I bet you never thought that would happen.
It really is. No, I grew up wanting to be a famous Broadway hoofer. I wanted to be a song and dance man and make my fame and fortune through theater and film and TV. And then, you know, God had other things in mind for me. And I felt the call to the ministry, and I left behind all my dreams of becoming a famous actor and becoming famous, and just decided that mine was to be a life of service in the LGBTQIA plus community. And I started working for MCC in 1977 and have not looked back. And, you know, what do you know? Here I am all these years later, and I'm actually more famous than I ever thought I would be. And I have been, you know, yesterday I went to the Oscar nominees luncheon as Jessica Chastain's date.
And so awesome.
It was, what?
I said, that's so awesome.
Again.
That is so lovely.
I know.
I'm sorry.
It was just incredible. It was just incredible. And I was astonished to find that people knew who I was. Jessica and I sat down for lunch at a table, at the table we were assigned. And Peter Sarsgaard and Maggie Gyllenhaal sat down next to me. And Jessica leaned across to them and said, I want you to meet the Reverend Steve. And before she could get out Steve Peters, Peter and Maggie said, oh, we know exactly who he is. We've always wanted to meet you. We've known about you for years, and your ministry and your activism has been so important in this world. And, I mean, all these different people at the Academy, all these Academy Award nominees knew who I am. And you know what? Fame has not solved all my problems. Fame has not, when I was growing up, I thought being famous would mean I would no longer be lonely. I thought being famous would mean I would be remembered forever. Well, you know what? I won't be remembered forever. And I'm not any more popular now than I was before all of this attention happened. And I am fine as I am. And I don't need all the – I mean, it's a lot of fun, and it was a real hoot to go to this event with Jessica yesterday. And, I mean, oh, my God, did I ever think anything like that would ever happen? I hoped it might, but, you know, anyway. Oh, forgive me. I just tripped off on all of that. And what we're talking about is being of service. Well, and you know, I realized that I could be of service there too. You know, I don't know if you know who Reverend Elder Nancy Wilson is, but she was the pastor of MCC Los Angeles, founders MCC, way back in the 80s and into the 90s. And she is this wonderful feminist, powerful peacemaker, justice seeker, and was an incredible pastor to all of us at MCC. She told me many years ago that, you know, of all the people in MCC, I was the one that would reach out to the entertainment world, that would reach out to the world of movie stars and TV celebrities and things like that. That I seemed to be moving in that direction, and I thought, oh, come on. No, I'm just trying to survive AIDS, and I'm trying to be of service at the AIDS hospice as chaplain. And you know what? She was right. it happened. And
yeah.
I just can't help but feel that this was my destiny. It was going to happen. And
absolutely.
Other people could see it, and I didn't. You know, I didn't for the longest time. And it's been a wonderful surprise.
You did that
surprise.
Interview in good faith, you know?
19,
I mean, that was a scary
1985.
Thing. I mean,
yeah.
At that time, there were people who were very evangelical Christians in the world
right.
that thought that gay people right. should be killed. I mean, to do
yeah,
that plus.
Absolutely.
And the opposite side of that is gays that so radically hated Christians that you could be ostracized
mm-hmm.
just for telling somebody that you were a Christian. So
exactly. Yes.
You were stuck in the middle of, you know, between a rock and a hard place. And the fact that you were brave enough
yeah.
to do that and brave enough to
yeah.
put yourself on the radar and not be scared that somebody who had, you know, a very dangerous idea of what Christianity was would come and take it out on you in some kind of violent way.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a very brave thing for you. It was a very brave thing for her to do. She could have, somebody dangerous could have shot her on the street, you know, for
yeah.
daring to interview somebody like that. So it
I
was,
know.
I kept thinking that, I hope that some moms, Christian moms that worshiped her, were, and there were so many, right, were nicer to
right.
their kids when they found out they were gay.
Oh, God. I hope so. I think that did happen, actually. I mean, you know, I'm told by friends of hers from back then that it rocked that world. And that it changed a lot of minds about gay people and about people with AIDS. And indeed, you know, I've become great friends with Jim and Tammy's son, Jay. And Jay Baker is a pastor. And he has a very small church, but a large following online, nothing like his parents had, but, you know, he's online and you can watch his message every Sunday, which I try to after Founders Service. And he's a wonderful guy, and we've become great, great friends. And he's told me that he was 10 years old when my interview happened. And he said it changed his family. His mother started taking him and his sister to MCCs. To gay-friendly churches, she started taking them to AIDS hospices and teaching them about ministering to people who were dying from AIDS. And she took them to gay pride parades and LGBTQIA parades, you know, and she became the head of the, you know, the what do you call it, the grand marshal of a number of our pride parades.
Sure.
And and she spoke at MCCs, and, you know, just she had a ministry beyond that televangelist conservative world. And that interview, Jay told me, is the straw that broke the camel's back for Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. They
I
saw
was
my
just
interview
gonna say
with
that.
Tammy Faye,
uh-huh.
And they
uh-huh.
decided Jim and Tammy had to come down. They had to be stopped.
Uh-huh.
And they did.
Yep.
They brought them
I
down.
I saw that, and I could tell that in the film, right, that was the straw.
Yeah.
Then he
yeah.
decided he had to take PTL over for himself, which then he, of course,
exactly.
also ran into the ground. I mean, it seemed like
exactly.
Jim was one of those people that I like to call morally questionable, like kind of a fence-sitter, but
mm-hmm.
very malleable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he sort of
mm-hmm.
followed her into the good. And then when he became involved
yeah.
with those other pastors, he kind of followed them into the greed. But I
exactly.
think had he not run into them, he
would
have stayed in more of a pure place with her. Because he didn't seem mm-hmm. so anti all of that until the others jumped in and kind of got on his back. I mean, I think there was a
yeah.
purity to what they did. And everything about her, you know, the makeup and the clothes and the
mm-hmm.
singing and the theatrics, like she was – she was very show busy. And so
oh, yeah.
I think the gays just naturally loved her because she was a diva.
Yeah.
I mean, not a diva in her personality, but I mean, she was like she looked like a diva icon. And
exactly. Yeah.
And I think she probably embraced that because I would imagine that gay men probably were nicer to her than all of that sort of misogynist background that she had come from.
Oh, before she died, she often said, and she said it on Larry King the day before she died on the Larry King interview she did. She said that when PTL fell apart and the scandal broke and all of that happened, it was the gay community that saved her. And she said that publicly. And a lot of people have forgotten that, but she really had gay men particularly rally around her, and drag queens, a lot of drag queens and transgender people gathered around her and held her up and helped her survive there in Palm Springs, where she spent a lot of her last years. And do you remember the Jim J. Bullock, Tammy Faye show? I mean,
hysterical.
Can't get much gayer than Jim J. Bullock. Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah. Also a lovely, very sweet man. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they were very close,
absolutely,
weren't they?
Oh, they were, indeed, yeah. And, you know, RuPaul was the person who narrated the documentary about Tammy Faye. It was RuPaul. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
The drag queens adore Tammy Faye. At the New York City premiere, I went to the New York premiere, and they had a hot pink carpet instead of a red carpet for the premiere.
Oh, that's awesome.
And there were all of these drag queens there, and they loved Tammy Faye, and they loved Jessica, and Jessica loved them, and they posed together, and they loved me, too.
Oh.
And I had some great pictures with this family of drag queens who were like the families in what was the name of the show, Pose? Was that it? With Billy Crudup?
Oh, yes. Oh, God, that's such a
Billy
good
Porter.
Show, isn't it?
Oh, isn't
yeah.
it so? I mean, but there were these families, and they gathered around Tammy Faye and helped her live and supported. You know, Jay once told me that he thought that a much better ending for the film, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, would have been, rather than having her singing at Oral Roberts University, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, you know, with this fantasy choir behind her. Spoiler alert, too late, I know. But
oh,
anyway,
yeah, that's okay.
Instead of having that as the ending, they should have had Tammy Faye teaching a bunch of drag queens to sing Jesus Loves Me at a pride parade.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
Isn't that...
Fantastic.
Because that
well,
really
and,
happened.
And think of all of the, you know, one of my, and I know you're too, one of my missions as a minister working at a queer church is for, to bring gays back to spirituality, right? Whatever kind of spirituality they want.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be Christianity. Because I feel bad that so many folks have kind of thrown the baby out with the bathwater, right? Rejected spirit because their church told them they weren't enough and lost their spirituality.
Right.
And lost their belief in spirit and the paranormal and their own afterlife and all of that. So I think she probably helped so much at that time when so many gays went completely into atheism to help sort of bring spirituality back to them. And that's a beautiful thing if you want it.
It
Not
sure
everybody
is.
Wants it, but if you want it, it's a wonderful thing. You are fantastic, my friend. Will you come do this again? And congratulations on all your success
and
the Oscar luncheon.
Oh, my love. Oh, thank you, Sheena. I'm just so appreciative of this opportunity to have a great conversation with you. It was
I cannot wait to see your face,
and I
loved being with you. Where can people find you online, sweetheart? Where can people find you and get to know you?
Well, I am at Rev Steve Peters. I'm Still Dancing on Facebook. I am on Instagram at, what is it, hashtag AS Peters, or is it star
It's at ASP. I think it's at ASP.
At ASPIETERS. That's me. And then on Twitter, I am. That's where it's hashtag ASPIETERS, I think. Or is it at there too?
Beautiful.
Anyway, you can find me. You can find me online there, and I have you know, an increasing amount of oh God, I don't know. Look for my memoir soon. I hope.
All right.
It's called "I Keep on Dancing." I keep on dancing, my journey through AIDS.
You'll have to come back, and we'll have to do that again.
I would love it.
Thank you for being here. I love and adore you. I think you are such a wonderful, beautiful, bright light in this world, and I don't know what I would do without you. And keep doing what you do, my friend. The wonderful Reverend Steve Peters, everybody. Isn't he fantastic? If you missed anything, you can find all of that information on my website, which is SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. You can find this show at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com. My nonprofit is at RaisingTheVibration.org. LiveParanormal.com is the network. And look for us on all of our beautiful affiliate families, including iHeartRadio.com. You can find me everywhere on social media at Sheena Metal. That's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter. Find me there, follow me, and you'll know what's going on with me. Till I see you next Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time, seek peace. Live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always raise your vibration. I'll see you next time. I love y'all.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.